Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, our first episode of 2021. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil in the ones and twos. Happy New Year, everyone. Sherry, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Jason.
Great to be back here. Our special guest today is Channel 9 meteorologist Steve Raleigh, here to talk about a really special personal project that he's working on, and really looking forward to having him join us here in a few minutes. First, Sherry, 2021 is here, and it appears as if it's going to be every bit as busy on the political scene as it was in 2020. Even though it is an off-year election year overall, but it's not here in Cincinnati with the mayor's race and the council race coming up.
And massively in flux, too. Like nothing that we thought they would be. There is not one person who has – most people say, Happy New Year, Sherry. Wow, you're really in for it this year. And it's like, well, that's not actually saying Happy New Year to me because everyone's scaring me.
Yeah.
But it really is like a takeaway. You know what? I'm talking to like work people or whatever. They just see really what's coming and they know what a big year it's going to be. And I feel like the weight of that and how important this is going to be. So we're going to let some of these people get into the mayor's race before we really start commenting too much on what's going on. We didn't see a lot of things. You know, my phone was ringing off the hook yesterday, Monday. We're recording on a Tuesday, Monday, January 4th, because people are like, who's announcing today? I was like, no one's announcing today. But we are going to see some of those coming up. And I do want to let people know that I'm working to put together with some of my teammates, you know, really these ongoing lists of who's running. And so you can always know, you can come to the Inquirer site. I'm going to try and keep these things as up to date as I can of like who's running, who's thinking about running, who said they're running, and that kind of thing. And to keep track of this until we really get into what these races look like with people's plans and turning in their signatures. We've seen three people do that. To my knowledge at this point, Rafael Prophet, a retired firefighter who's running for mayor, turned in his signatures over the holidays. And then Michelle Dillingham and I believe Brian Gary on the council side, they got their signatures in. And so we're off and we're running.
Let's do it. It's going to be it's going to be a wild ride, so hang in there with us, Cincinnati.com, at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter, at Jay Williams, Cincy. We'll be all over this. Other folks here at the Inquirer, too, so stick with us. I know you're super interested in city politics and the goings-on at City Hall and this election, so I think it's promising to be an intense campaign.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Those two things going together.
Let's jump over. Bring on Steve Raleigh. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Really pleased to welcome today Chief Meteorologist from Channel 9 WCPO, Steve Raleigh. Steve, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Jason, Sherry. I think we all need a Happy New Year. Everybody's looking forward to going into 2021, I think.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And so much we want to ask you about. Sherry and I have really wanted to have you on for a while. And not only do you know we see you every night on TV with the weather, but you've also taken on a new, very personal project. And a year
right.
ago... born out of tragedy, but great things are happening with it, and that's Maddie's House. Talk about how Maddie's House came about, what it is, what it does.
Just almost about 2 years ago, my wife and I lost our daughter. She was 24 years old, and she fought the battle of addiction and some mental health issues. And it had been going on for quite a number of years. 10 or 12 to be exact. She was, as I say, 24 at the time and took her own life. And at that point, my wife came out with a statement that even happened during the memorial service that said, we are going to war against these two factions. Mm. And with that said, as a family, we decided to set up something that would help. And the interesting part of what Maddie's house is was something that came out of what my daughter had said. What I like to call a moment of clarity from my daughter was something that she said to us, I just wish I had somewhere to hang out. Because there were times at which she was really getting herself together. There were times where she was ready to go forward and she had nowhere to go. Quite frankly, as we can understand, she couldn't fall back to the people she had been with. She really couldn't find any new friends. There was a certain stigma associated with the problem she was having. And she was basically just hanging out with my wife and I. And, you know, that's no fun. I mean, for a 24-year-old. So what we did is Maddie's house is a really a recovery and mental health community center. And so as a result, you go there. There is some games like video games. There's an art therapy. There's music. There's fitness. And then, of course, we also hold AA and NA meetings. So what happens is folks will hold a meeting and then hang out, maybe even watch a movie. We've been open from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday since the day after Thanksgiving. And quite proudly, I can tell you we've been full every day. So we feel very good about this going forward because this is something that, well, quite frankly, without droning on here, guys, there's nowhere in the tri-state, there's nowhere in the Midwest like something of what we're providing. And we're hopefully going to be the model for other communities that can take this and then move it into their city.
I mean, we've written so much about the opioid crisis and, you know, the drug addiction, and it's kind of in the pandemic, I feel like it's being overshadowed, all of that coverage, just a little bit. But we do concentrate on that, and we talk about recovery and recovery beds and what all that looks like all the time, and it's so important. But then it is like, mm-hmm. what happens next? It's not a magic cure, I know, and it seems like that you had maybe even been thinking about this beforehand.
Yeah, I have to say that, Sherry, that the reality is there's no aftercare in the society here, and that's the problem. Now, we don't provide a place to stay, and we're not a rehab center. We really are a place to create community, and that's what's not happening. We all know, thankfully, because of, frankly, work like you do and Jason and others, you've been writing about the situation, and it takes down that stigma in everybody's mind where I can't begin to tell you guys how often someone will get a hold of my wife or I and say, well, my son, my daughter, my nephew, my brother, my sister, we all know it's pervasive. Yeah. The kind of strange thing was, I think until it happened to us, is it's kind of an ephemeral, yeah, that is something. But the reality is there really needs to be more done along this line where we create something after somebody is ready to get healthy and then go forward. And hopefully we're doing a small part, and Maddie's house is at least biting a little bit of that situation off and trying to help.
What's some of the feedback you're hearing from folks who have been able to come in and have a great place to hang out? And what are some of the – has there been any just cool stories that you've heard come out of Maddie's house so far?
I can give you one right off the bat. We count our program director, Dana, as our first person to do this. And I wouldn't necessarily talk about someone's personal story except – she has talked about it publicly, and so she's certainly comfortable with it. But Dana was fighting a lot of the same demons that my daughter was. And my wife went and did a bunch of focus groups at some of the facilities, rehab places around the area. And she met Dana there. And then lo and behold, Dana wanted to help out. She's an artist by trade. And she said, I'd just like to come and, you know, kind of paint some things on your wall if you'd like. And the reality was, as she came in, she started to paint. She's a heck of a talent. And then all of a sudden, her partner told us that Dana's outlook on life changed. She no longer had a very dark side to her because she was feeling fulfilled. She had a purpose in life. She no longer was thinking of those dark thoughts that she had already tried to do in her past. And so she was number one of the people we believe that we've helped. In addition to that, guys, I'll tell you this. We have people now that come in every day and tell us the same thing. I've been telling people about this because hanging out with people like me is so much easier, and I feel better about myself. So specifically Dana, and in general, the folks who have come in, we do believe we're making a difference. And now it's just a matter of growing the facility. So we are on that track going into this next year.
When you say growing it, the space that you're in now, or do you envision more than one Maddie's House, like exactly, having them in different places?
Very, actually both. You know, you guys are such good reporters. You don't miss a beat when somebody says something. So yeah, that's exactly, that's exactly what we see, in both cases. And, right now I'm not at, liberty to say, where we're going next, but, I do believe shortly we're going to have an announcement that is going to expand Maddie's House to a really significant way. And that's additionally, awesome. We do down the line, in our business plan, somewhere in year 3 to 5, we would like to start, using our original model as a way of opening things up in other spots. Right now, obviously it's a universal facility for anybody who would like to come. It's located in the west side of Cincinnati at present. And so we just would like to make it more accessible, of course, for everybody, whether it's Northern Kentucky, the east side, or anywhere else, or Indiana.
Has your platform as a, you know, in your role as a meteorologist for Channel 9, everybody knows you, whether you know them or not. You know, you're in our living rooms every night. Has your role and your platform there been able to help with the building of Maddie's House? That, hey, people see, like, hey, they want to donate. Oh yeah, that's the guy on TV. Like, love to help out. Has that helped with the growth of Maddie's House?
It has, Jason. There's no question about that. And let me say this about that first. I couldn't be more thankful to Scripps and Channel 9 for their support during all of this. They could have done something that was very nice, and then we could have moved on in life. It is still a business, and they have to go forward. But they have bent over backwards for my wife and I to be able to help. Including a telethon early last year that was significant in getting the word out. And specifically when it comes to that, absolutely, you know, the reality is I have a platform in which to get the word out. And in some ways, Jason and Sherry, my wife and I, were people of faith. And while we don't like the planned start, we kind of believe that there's a reason why this happened to us, even though we don't like how things have gone to start. Because of my whatever public persona, my wife is very threaded throughout the community and fundraising and networking. And so we may have a unique kind of positioning as parents and as people to be able to go forward in this endeavor in a successful way. And I think so far things have worked out well, mostly because folks have understood the need and the necessity of something like this.
How can people donate?
Well, it's very simple. Thank you for asking. It's maddieshousecincy.org. So it's MaddieshouseCincy.org, maddieshousecincy.org. And we have a donate button there. And so that's the simplest way to do it. And anything, of course, is appreciated. We, you know, we're going forward in this big plan, I think, this year. And we'll really need the funds.
I looked at it when you first started, and then, of course, I was looking at it again yesterday in preparation, and there's just such a lovely picture of your daughter on there. I love, like, because she dressed in camo all the time, and with her her love of pink, and, like, I think that's so sweet. It's all over the website. You can see, like, that army green and pink.
You know, my daughter loved camo. It was a rare day where you didn't see her in it, that or pink. And so when my wife, who understands the fashion things in life better than I do, you know, we decided on what our logo would be and our colors and everything, she said, oh, we've got to go camo and pink. And I said, boy, I don't think there's anything better than that. So, yeah, the camo thing has been a big thing, sure.
Are there other ways folks can get involved with Maddie's House? Are there volunteer opportunities, or is any other way to? And I know you give them, we'll give the email or the website address again. Is there any other ways that people can get involved?
You know, thank you for asking that, Jason. Because there is, and again, on the website there is a page for volunteering. We have been very lucky to have a core of about 15 or 20 people who have wanted to donate their time. And the one thing I will say is it's not necessarily that you have been touched by any of this. It's more of a case of just being able to maybe check some folks in, provide some other things, write out some documents we need. So it's not necessarily a situation that you have to be in any form of a counselor or anything along those lines, because that's not necessarily what we do. We are planning on doing some of that down the line. I have to say we have a kind of a rock star board. A number of people we're just so very lucky to have with us. We have support from Mercy Health. We have support from some CEOs here in town. And one of our board members is really our lead medical person, and that is Dr. Robin Arthur. Robin was actually the person who built the medical program at the Lindner Center. So you can see, you know, the stature that she has. And it's funny, guys. How did we get such a superstar person to help us out with this? Well, she went to grade school, my wife, at St. Catherine. So
that
when
is...
she heard about this, she was...
That's so Cincinnati right there.
Know, right?
And we say in a positive way. The connections.
Yeah, isn't that so Cincinnati? Exactly. So she reached out to my wife and said, is there anything that I could do? And so they met over lunch a couple of times, and she said she was vested into the idea. And she, more than anybody, of course, someone with clinical training like herself, she's the first one to tell you that this aftercare need is just not being met. So we've got to succeed here. We just have to.
Maddie's House, M-A-D-I-S, Cincy, CINCY.org, Maddie's House, Cincy.org. Really want to encourage folks to check it out if they move to be volunteer or donate, or just check out what you have going on. Check that out.
Thank you.
Everyone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did want to ask you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So Jason mentioned, you know, we watch you on the news, and we do.
Sure.
But a lot of times I'm on deadline there. But just the I like Twitter. I look at your Twitter. That's the first thing I do in the morning because I'm looking for the weather and like, all these different ways of delivering the weather to people. What is your day like?
That's good. That's a good question. First thing in the morning when I get up, and I'm usually up fairly early, mostly because I'm an old man and I don't sleep well anymore. So I'm up at about 8 o'clock or so, and when I get up, first thing I do is I open up my iPad and I generally check what's going on. You know, there's a great quote that I've used for a long time, Sherry. You know, I always look out the window as well, and quite frankly, I don't care what the weather is anymore as long as it's doing what I said it was going to do the night before. So, you know, that's
a good barometer right there.
yeah, right. And so I kind of catch up on some of the modeling overnight and that kind of thing, see what's happening. And And then, yeah, you mentioned Twitter. I'm big into Twitter because I love the immediacy of it. I think it's a really great facet. I know some folks, you know, into Instagram or anything else, but I like Twitter a lot. And generally, I put out a morning tweet or I have one set to go out. And either way, then I kind of go through it, get a little breakfast in. And then the key is back at 1 o'clock, computer models, go back through the process. So as a result, everything's new again at 1 o'clock. And that's when I'm kind of looking at, what's happening for the rest of the day. And then I build my forecast sometime right after that. And, the interesting part is, you know, I have trouble drawing stick figures. Thank goodness we've gone to, you know, high-end computer systems where I can tell things what to do so I can render out graphics for the night that I have to describe the weather.
Can you look at those modelings, like, on your iPad and your iPhone, or is it, like, sophisticated, like, equipment that's separate?
You know, it's both. We have in-house models that I need our own computers for. Then also there is modeling that you can go out to websites to get and or subscribe to. And so it's both in that case. And the reality is just as a small aside for everybody listening, every day you look at those models, they are absolutely wrong. They might ask, what do you mean absolutely wrong? Yeah, well, we know weather is an inexact science, all right? The science of medicine is if you move a spleen, the same thing's underneath the spleen every single time. Whereas because the models can't keep up with the atmosphere, as soon as they come out, they're already either delayed, behind, or maybe even completely wrong. Because as you can imagine, if one little thing is wrong in the overall modeling of what they believe is going to happen, it perpetuates itself over the next hours, days, or whatever. So that's the trick, so to speak, or the analysis of a meteorologist to be able to determine what's actually happening as opposed to what the models say, and to use your experience to determine, I don't know about that, I think more this. And so as a result, that's how sometimes both we are stellar and then also apologizing for the fact that we had 3 inches of partly cloudy.
35 years as a meteorologist. And how did you get interested in becoming a meteorologist?
Quite honestly, I started in Jackson, Mississippi. I had my father was in radio, and so I started radio in high school and had a little bit of success in that, and worked in Hartford and also in New York. And so then I realized I wanted to get into television, and so I went to Jackson, Mississippi to get into TV, and I did kind of the everything guy. I did weekend news. I did weather at 10 o'clock. I reported before that. And then I realized weather is really where I wanted to be. I always enjoyed science, and I thought I might be a marine biologist when I grew up in Boston. So I went back to school for meteorology so I could have the credentials to be able to sustain a career. So it was just one of those things that I just enjoyed because I enjoyed the science of it. Every day is different. It's a challenge every day, and that's what keeps it interesting for me.
What is one of your – so wait, what year did you come to Cincinnati then?
I've been here for 16 years.
Did you
think – this is your second go-around, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, well, that's the thing about this is I have been in and out of Cincinnati for really all of my career because I married a woman who grew up here. And a lot of folks will know her dad, and that is the former sheriff, Simon Lease. So let me tell you this. When I would go up and knock on the door to take his daughter out, I was a pretty confident young cat, but that stare that he has pretty much will shake you in your boots. I'll tell you that.
I know exactly what stare you were talking about. And I mean, I wasn't taking his daughter out. I was just going to interview him, but I know.
Yeah, and you'll appreciate this more. Since I was here back in 1985, it was kind of the spiral of my career. I went from Jackson to Memphis to Cincinnati, and I promptly met Julie, courted her, and swept her out of town within 2 years. And more to the fact of what everybody knows about Cy. And then I promptly took her to the cradle of liberalism in San Francisco for nearly 20 years. So I was on the sheriff's hit list for a long time, I think.
Did he come out and visit you guys there?
Yeah, he did. We've always had a great relationship, and I think it might have been because I held the four aces of life, which were Kyle, Chelsea, Madison, and Carter. So we were the first ones to have the grandchildren.
Are you so when you went to ask your now father-in-law if you could marry his daughter, was that hard? Was that intimidating? Was it because everybody – it's Sheriff Lease is a very, powerful figure and no nonsense and – you know, was that a is there a story there to tell?
Well, yes, the answer is yes, because quite honestly, and I'm a pretty straight shooter in life, Jason. I made the great error in judgment of not going to him and asking for his for her hand in marriage.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I was a young, brash media guy, and so the joke that we've had over through the years is I couldn't have made a bigger error in life by not doing that. So consequently,
because he seems like the guy he's the kind of dad that you would do that. Like, you got to take him out to lunch and talk with him and finesse him a little bit and then drop the question.
You see, Jason, that's why you're a bright, intellectual, political reporter, and I'm a doofus goon because I didn't realize that at the time. And so, now, I will tell you this, and one of the things that a lot of folks don't know about Cy is he may be one of the great guys to have a beer with. He laughs easily. Who I've often thought he reminds me a lot of, for folks who are into sports, and a lot of this town is he reminds me of Bill Belichick. He goes to the podium, he's the, on to Cincinnati, on to Cincinnati, we're on to Cincinnati, yeah. But get him sitting around a table or, you're just sitting, as I say, having a Miller Lite. The guy's really a terrific guy.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the things, for whatever reason, he may not have shared through his career in life, but folks probably should know.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. He actually, I just played golf with him recently. The amazing thing is at 87 years old, he's still terrific and in great shape. Things have been difficult at best, because of COVID. And so we really haven't been around them to any significant way. We played golf and he was in a cart and I was in a separate cart. And, that's the last time we really saw him. And we don't have a chance to be around him much because we're trying to be as careful as possible.
That is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like everybody's going through it. It's just, it's difficult because we used to have Sunday dinners together every Sunday. The family would generally go to his house because my wife has two sisters. And so all the family would go there. Like everybody, we've all had to make adjustments.
So tell us about what's the craziest day of weather here in Cincinnati that you can kind of remember reporting.
No, there's bar none. Yeah, bar none, Sherry. It was March 2nd, 2012, when a lot of people don't know this. You know, everybody points to the Xenia tornado outbreak, which was horrible, of course, for many areas, not just here, across this region, but across the entire country. And from a general sense of weather, yes, that is the worst day we probably ever had in our lifetimes. However, for the tri-state, it was March 2nd back then. And the reason why is we had F4 tornadoes. We had F3. We had the most tornadoes we've ever seen in one outbreak ever. And I guess the weird part of that, Sherry, to say was crazy is because naturally all hands were on deck. We were on for hours. I think I was on continuously for almost 9 hours.
Wow.
And the crazy part about that at times is this. I'm on in front of the green screen, and I'm talking about weather, and I'm analyzing as I go. And so in this kind of breaking weather situation, you know, you have to take a look at things on the fly, and you look and you analyze as you go. And one of the things that happens during tornado outbreaks, and specifically that one, is I knew it was going to be horrible before I had to see anything on the ground, video evidence, people being there reporting, people losing their homes, their life, because I'm up there and I'm seeing the intensity level of some of these tornadoes, and there's just no way anybody is going to sustain this if it goes through a populated area such as it did in parts of Piner or Moscow or other spots like in Indiana in Holton that day when one of the tornadoes broke out. And so as a result, that's the most difficult part, honestly, for me. I guess, you know, because I have a family and a wife, I just think to myself when I'm up there, my God, these people are being threatened with their life right now. But if I turn to the camera and show that kind of, show that kind of being scared, I guess, is the phrase that I'm looking for. It's not going to help anybody in trying to deal with the situation. And so that's probably the most difficult day and both the most difficult time I probably ever went through in weather, quite honestly, because it was the worst outbreak of weather I ever forecasted was that day.
What was it like actually seeing then the video feed footage coming in from what you could see on your screen in a studio? I assume like these studios don't have windows typically, the ones I've seen,
right?
And then like see what was coming in. Was it matching what you were thinking in your head?
Yeah, you know, that's, yes. And the thing was, is while it was very sad, it wasn't shocking to me. And that's kind of my point, I think, in that I already know ahead of time that things are going to be devastating, before we actually have the evidence of that, because there's no question that it won't be. It's the same idea when we talk about a massive hurricane, and I might be, while we're not a hurricane threatened area, when we talk about recently with anything that just happened this past season, whether it was the category fours or threes or fives that are major hurricanes, you just know this thing's going to be a buzzsaw. And folks, sometimes I don't always think, and we know this to be true because when I go to my conferences, folks don't necessarily take it in that it's absolutely 100% of what we're talking about until sometimes they see it. One of the biggest things we talk about at sometimes like the American Meteorological Society or the National Weather Association is we now have talked about the psychology of weather. People oftentimes, especially now because of quick social media and everything else, they want to A, record it, and B, go out and see it to make sure it's really happening. And it's like the worst two mistakes you could possibly make in a severe weather situation. I don't understand it. But I just hope the whole idea and the philosophical idea changes for folks.
Wow. One, along the lines of television and local television, and like you said, you've been in several markets and,
sure.
a couple different stations here in Cincinnati. One thing that, you know, Sherry, we had Anjanette Levy on a few episodes ago, and the fascination with local television folks, it blows me away. And, you know, we write a story about, you know, someone in local television and people just eat it up. Is that a Cincinnati thing? Or, and again, I've been in some other markets, but you've been in TV in other markets. Is that very similar, you know, in other markets too, that people are just so into, you know, their local television, you know, personalities and journalists?
Yeah, I think twofold. Yes, it does happen in the markets that I've been in. I think there are levels. Let me answer that first, and that is when I worked in San Francisco for about 20 years, that area, because of the size of the city, had a lot of movie actors, sports celebrities, you know, name those kind of high-end VIPs.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, the hierarchy, sort of speak, of you might run into Robin Williams at the time at, you know, the local Whole Foods because he's sitting there buying some lettuce. So there was that. I think to some degree, because of different markets have different elevations in how many celebrities, what kind are there, that plays a part into it. But I think the key, and this I think goes to the heart of your question, is because we come into people's homes, unlike anything else.
Yep.
And that is not lost on me, because quite frankly, without that, I don't pay the mortgage at the end of the month, right? So I'm always very aware of that. And I think the folks who understand this business best understand the fact that someone has decided to let you into their inner sanctum, so to speak. And as a result, if they continue to do that, there is a relationship that's built.
Yeah.
You know, like anybody else in life, I have a crutch or two when I speak on camera. And whatever it may be, sometimes it's this or that. And I've heard from people that said, oh, I like it when you say that because you always do. Now, for me as a broadcaster, I don't necessarily consider that a compliment. Myself, I'm on Steve. Come on, Steve, clean up your act. But the reality is that's how close you become with an audience or a viewer because of that. And so I think that is the biggest thing. And frankly, when I was younger, you know, I've already mentioned that I was full of bravado, and I think that's fair. I think later here in life, I've learned I'm a lot more appreciative and a lot more understanding of folks who decide to let me in their homes.
You're a friend. You're there with people every night. They can count on you. You're giving them the weather, and especially at times when it's severe weather, you're a comforting figure. I can see where people would have that connection.
Well, you know, let's hope. Let's hope, Jason, because, to sustain the last part of my career, I'd like that to continue. But truthfully, to go back to our little statement about Cy, about having a beer, that's always been the phrase that many, you know, the TV consultants or anybody else or TV executives want in somebody who's on their newscast. And that is, especially when it comes to a weather guy, and it's why we go out, well, at least in the old days, you know, not the past year, but going out to do live broadcasts, to do different events, things along those lines, because for the weather guy, if he comes across as a guy you'd like to have a beer with, then probably that's a pretty good accomplishment. And that's hopefully what I try and convey every night when I'm on the air.
Great stuff, Steve. We'll catch you on Twitter at Cincy. How do you say it? Wex? WX, man. I know that's short for
weather.
Yeah,
WX is the shortened television for weather.
Yeah.
I thought I'd be very clever, and now I spend my life going WX, man. Weather, you know, so yeah. Cincy WX, man.
At Cincy WX, man on Twitter. And I want to remind folks about the Maddie's house website, and that's Maddie's House Cincy Ashland.org to check out, you know, the great work that you and your wife are doing there. And just thank you so much for coming on and sharing about Maddie's House and sharing your story. And all the best to you and your family and to the team of folks who are building Maddie's House into an organization that's, I just envision as reaching, you know, hundreds and thousands of people as you continue to grow. So, you know, all the best to you. And, you know, certainly you have our support in what you're doing there.
Jason, Sherry, I can't thank you enough for having me on. Both, it was fun. And being able to get the message out about Maddie's House, I just can't say enough to say thank you. And I appreciate it so much.
Thanks again to Steve Rawley. And Sherry, just really appreciate Steve coming on and sharing about, you know, Maddie's House and his story. And gosh,
you do feel connected to them. I mean, I know him a little bit socially, but not really. But I feel like I know him from watching the weather and really, I mean, seriously following along with like the Twitter weather. So he's very right about that and that they are celebrities. I had a recent moment, like we were outside and I was with Rob Williams over at Fox 19 and we're like socially distanced on the street. So he's kind of walking, I'm walking, and he seemed like he was alone, and just the people like saying things to him from the other side of the street. Like they stopped the car, they rolled down the window, and like they just, they really feel connected to the people who come in their homes all the time.
Yeah. It's just, it's interesting as I'm sitting here thinking about it and how, I don't like celebrity is not the right word, but how attention, even in our industry, because for so long, the newspaper, like you didn't know who your newspaper people were. You saw their names, but you didn't see their face, or, you know, the columns here and there, you'd see their little, you know, tiny headshot or whatever in the newspaper. But, you know, now with social media, there's a lot of that, that it's not – the word celebrity is not the right word, but you become more brand. Known as a brand, or a brand's probably, you know, a friend and someone you do like, someone you don't like, you know. It's so much more prevalent, you know, now and even in our side of the journalism world. Great stuff. Hey, I want to remind folks, just I can't stress enough, check that out. Check out Maddie's House and, you know, maddieshousecincy.org. And just really commend Steve and his family for the work they're doing there. And, you know, as those things of you talk about impacting, you know, so many people's lives. Hey, it's impacted my life. I lost my first cousin, who was my best friend growing up, to a drug overdose. It was 10 years ago this past Labor Day weekend. So, you know, I thought of her as we were talking about Maddie's House. And so, yeah, it just impacts so many people. And so just can't thank Steve and his family enough for what they're doing and the efforts they're doing with that. Sherry, have we reached our – so since – Cincinnati moment of the week.
I believe we have.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's easy this week.
And it is.
Hi. As pandemic related, I work in one guest room and Alex Coolidge works in another. And I see in like our team's app, there was some big news happening. Alex was all over it. Tom Williams bought a share of Skyline Chili.
One share.
One share. Nothing's changing. And it was just gigantic news. We watched the numbers just, you know, Alex took this like super serious. He was like, you know, like I was like, oh, wow, da 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 da. And he's like, get out of here. And he just very serious business about it. And with like, you know, the very important questions, people were like, is it going to change? Which the answer, of course, it's not going to change. But I mean, the questions were pouring in like right off the bat. Tell him not to change the crackers. Like it was like, and you know, we have some leftover crackers from the holiday season. And I was like, just unconsciously, as to make sure they didn't get thrown out, like putting them in like the jar where we keep them. I was like, just in case.
And folks need to know, you don't get much more Cincinnati than Tom Williams. So this is not some outside person coming in and buying a share of Skyline. Tom Williams and his family are Cincinnati through and through from their history with Western and Southern and helping to build that company with their history with the Reds and longtime part ownership of the Reds and their family and the work they've done in development and in the business community. And I have great respect for Tom Williams and his family and his nephew, Dick Williams, you know, used to be the general manager of the Reds. So this is not someone, you know, from Dallas, Texas or, you know, London or wherever coming in and, you know, it's buying somebody into Skyline. This is a Cincinnati
understands
and through and through.
The gravity
exactly
of this purchase.
That's a great Cincinnati moment of the week, right? Yeah, there. Totally. That is so Cincinnati, as Phil would say. With that, we're really trying to get back. We used to do this a lot. We have that so Cincinnati moment of the week, and we would ask you for you to email us about your so Cincinnati moment of the week or your moment of the month or what, just something. It could be little, it could be big. Whatever. We love to hear from you. We love to have you let us know what, you know, what your moment is that is incredibly so Cincinnati. Email scoolidge@inquire.com. And you CC me or email us both, jwilliams@inquirer.com, scoolidge@inquire.com, jwilliams@inquire.com. Also, you could message us on Twitter @SharonCoolidge. Or @JWilliamsCincy with a Y on Twitter.
We are on Twitter all the time.
The time. We pretty much probably between the two of us have 20 hours of the day. I mean,
oh,
I'm
definitely.
A night owl.
You know, I've said this before on the podcast. I'm an early morning person. Jason stays up late. If you need us, that's how you get us.
Yeah. Probably got about 20 hours of the day covered on Twitter. So
nobody wants to see my screen time. When it pops up on Sundays, it's so horrifying. Like, I would never tell Jack, our son, because I'm always like, oh, you've been on your screen too much. Then it's like, well, mine's going to be like 10 hours and 15 minutes, like a day.
Happy New Year, everyone, again. Thanks so much for listening, and looking forward to another exciting year of this podcast. So thanks for your support. We'll catch you next week.